Welcome to the Ember Wing Collective podcast. I'm Kimberly Beer.
And I'm Vicky Dorica.
Hi, Vicky. How are you today?
Fine. I'm fine. I'm doing well.
Doing well. It's a fun day today. So Vicky and I have, we're on our batch recording of podcasts. So this is our second episode and we had a lot of fun on the first one. And now we're ready to do number two. And our topic for this one is ancestors and getting to know your ancestors and how they kind of reflect into your life. And the way that we discuss doing this episode is we're both going to share a story about connecting with ancestors. And I have been elected to go first, so I'm going to go first. So if you've known me for any length of time, you're going to know I had a hysterectomy in May of 2025. We're recording this in October of 2025. And I have done a lot of personal work over the past decade. I have done a lot of Gestalt work. I have done a lot of hypnosis work. I've done a lot of personal spirituality work. I mean, I have put in some effort in understanding the connection between myself, everything around me, my history. Part of what I explored was my genogram and getting to know my ancestors, which I will say I had a curiosity about long before I started into my own personal development. So I became the family historian, which is odd. My temperament does not lend itself to be the person who is the family historian who finds all this stuff out. But my curiosity really, really drove me to find out who my family was. Because honestly, when my dad died, I didn't know his mother's name. I didn't know his father's name. I knew a little bit more about my, so for those of you who don't know, I was adopted by my grandparents. I'm not going to get into the whole thing. So my maternal grandparents. And so one whole side of my family, I knew nothing about. My father's side, I didn't even know who he was. I didn't have a clue as to who he was. I had minor clues, but not a lot of clues. So anyway, over that period of time, a couple of things that are important to this story. One, I became very aware of how what happens in your physical body is often a manifestation of what's going on in your spirituality, in your personal life, in your trauma. There's a book called The Body Keeps the Score, if you're really interested in reading more about this theory. In my personal experience, this has proved out to be true. I know it doesn't feel that way for everyone, but in my personal experience, it has. And I hold open for anybody's experiences that are similar or very different. But for me, it held to be very true. So in my personal situation for my body, I had very large fibroids, which are benign tumors in your uterus. And I have been fighting these things for most of my life, most of my adult life, let's put it that way. And they've been particularly problematic for over a decade. And finally, in May of this year, my doctor says it's time to have a hysterectomy because they're just getting bigger and it's just going to get worse. So it's time to get rid of them. And you know, it's interesting as a woman, even one who is on the other side of menopause, to take a look at losing what the world defined you as a woman. Like that is the definition of being a woman, right? Your uterus, your ovaries, that's what makes you female. And so the thought of losing that intrinsic part of me was an interesting thought process. And so I've done a lot of work around my own personal sexual trauma, my own personal family trauma. And one of the things that I recognized in doing that work is that the women in my family have had a lot of trauma when it comes to this organ in their body. Right. So my great grandmother, and I'm going to go by my adoption. So when I refer to people as great grandmother, I'm going to refer to them as my as the way that it is legally, not as the way that it is biologically. But my great grandmother, Edith, she had a baby out of wedlock in the 1800s in the poorhouse in Springfield, Missouri. It's a very interesting story. She actually named the father of the baby, who is like illegitimate because she married somebody else when that child was like three, but she went back home to her family. And over the years, I don't know what her story is. I don't know how she ended up pregnant. I have feelings, though. I have impressions. I have had visits with Edith. And you know, the interesting question of, you know, if you could have dinner with any person living or dead in history, who would that person be? It would 100% be Edith Beer. Nice. Because I have questions. But over the time, I have not only communed with Edith in records, but I've communed with her on a different level, on a spiritual level, on a connected level. And in my personal opinion, in my belief system, you have ancestors that contribute DNA to you. You have ancestors that contribute energetically to you. So if you're adopted, you have the people in your life that adopted you, and they contribute energetically to your ancestry and your history. So technically, all of their history becomes your history because it's part of what creates you in this lifetime, right? And then you also have like your starseed ancestry. So all of the interesting stardust that makes you up that could have come from here or somewhere way, way, way far away from here. And all of the energy that you have collected in that, all of the things that make you up have been here infinitely. And so you carry all of that energy around. So there's all of these multi-levels to your ancestry, right? But in this particular case, I'm digging down into just my DNA ancestry. Like, this is my physical body that is struggling. So the doctor says you need to have a hysterectomy, I knew that my biological grandmother, or my mother, the woman who raised me, she had difficulty with carrying pregnancies. And I have some theories around some things where she's concerned with that, but there's a lot to it. And then we have my own biological mother who chose to use her uterus in a completely different way, which resulted in me. So there's all of this interesting thing around this organ. And as I got to knowing my ancestors better, both through spiritual practice as well as through actual genealogy, I can prove it on a piece of paper, records, it became more and more apparent to me that the women in my family struggled a lot. And as that doctor said that to me that day, I was very reluctant. I was like, I don't want to have surgery. I don't, because honestly, I didn't want to take the time. I'll be flat with you. It wasn't the surgery that bothered me. It was taking the time to heal up. Because in my fast-paced life, taking 6 to 8 weeks off and not doing anything is, it feels like I was being sentenced to some kind of prison somehow. So in my own brain, it turned out great. I really enjoyed it.
So is that how the experience turned out?
No, the experience panned out completely differently. But I also had this feeling inside of me that this was part of the reason that I came into this lifetime. Like, again, in my belief system, I do think you come here with a contract that you make with the energetic world and the universe and your spirituality and your soul to say, these are the lessons that I want to embody while I'm here. And I do think all of that starseed DNA, regular DNA, energetic DNA, I think all of that kind of gets mixed up into who you are. And so I wanted to sit with ancestors, especially the women in my family line, and really deeply sit with each one of them over a period of days before I had the surgery. So between the time I decided I was going to do this and the time that I actually went in for surgery, I sat with a different grandmother or mother every single day. And every morning I would get up and I would have a practice of pulling from different decks depending upon what that grandmother wanted to do. I let her choose a candle. of what she wanted to bring forward. If there was a crystal in my collection that she was particularly attracted to. Interestingly enough, in this practice, I learned they all want to shuffle card decks differently. Like some of them want to throw cards across the room. Others of them want them neatly stacked and pulled from a cut in the card deck. I learned 100 different ways to draw cards from these women, but I sat with each one of them. And I even went to the extent for the biological grandmother on my father's side, who I never met. Never knew any of the family. Well, she was gone before I was born, but never knew any of them. Never knew any of them. By the way, Ancestry DNA outed my dad. After everybody in my family was dead, within 6 months of the last person passing away, that gate fell away and Ancestry outed him through my DNA. So I got to know him. I started meeting some of his relatives. So I now knew where his family, where he and his family are buried. So I actually drove to the cemetery where they were buried and sat with that particular grandmother to get to know her better, because she is a German immigrant, which the other side of my family has been here since way pre-revolution. they were sent over here early on in the whole deal. So, but this is a relatively newer line. And so I sat on her grave and talked with her because I wanted to know how to take the thread that ran through all of us and somehow ended up with all of these tumors in my uterus, and wanted to be able to undo that thread. And probably the best metaphor that I can think of is a feed sack. So if you've ever lived on a farm and you have a feed sack that you want to get open and empty, there's a little thread on the top of the sack. And if you pull it correctly, it undoes the entire top of the sack very easily. But a lot of times, if you go on the wrong end of it or whatever that happens to be, you can fight with that sucker until you go grab a knife or a pair of scissors and chop your way into the sack. But over the years of being a farmer, I have learned how to open those sacks. And so I can do it really easily. I know where to grab the piece of thread to pull on it. And it felt very much like the work I was doing was like that. It was grabbing that thread. And as I was undoing it, going back and sitting with each grandmother, each mother, and then grandmother over time, it unraveled. And it allowed all of that heaviness that was contained in that sack to be opened up and emptied. And of course, you have no idea going into the surgery. Part of the reason my doctor wanted me to have the surgery is because there was a chance that I had a very rare kind of cancer, because fibroids should not grow after you get through menopause. But if you have this rare kind of cancer, that can be one of the indications that you have it, is that they keep growing in size. And it's not something that they can easily find in any kind of testing, in any sonograms or anything like that. MRIs can give them an idea if it's there, but they actually have to get the organ out and biopsy it in order to say that that is not the case, right? So in the process of sitting with those grandmothers, I created basically a ritual. I don't know if I would call it a ritual. It was a morning ritual for me, but it was this entire process that took me over a month of sitting with these women and allowing them to wash over me in their own wisdom through card decks, through intuition, through the candles that they chose, through the images that they sent me. So my place where I meditate and do my card readings and spiritual practice, it looks out over our front yard. And certain ones of them, there was high drama in my front yard. Like Edith, there was a spider in the window when I was working with her, and that spider ate another spider. It was very disturbing to me because I was witnessing this while I was sitting with her. Another grandmother sent crows. Another grandmother sent a coyote to take an egg out of a nest. I mean, it was there was all kinds of interesting things with the environment around me that didn't happen prior to me sitting with that grandmother, or didn't happen after that. Or now that when it does happen, I recognize that it's a message from that particular ancestor. But it was truly enlightening to sit with each one of them. And as I did so, I feel like I popped a stitch on that bag until I got down to the end. And then I went into my surgery with such an open mind and such an open heart, and knowing that it was absolutely the right thing to do, that I was not a basket case at all. And then when the surgery was over, the extent of the amount of trauma that I had been carrying in my pelvic region, so in that chakra around creation, around creativity, around all of those things, was monumental. I had every benign gynecological condition that you can have with those organs. So I had fibroids, I had endometriosis, and I'm going to butcher this name if you're a doctor, but adenomyosis, I think is how you say it. I had an ovarian cyst. I had all of the things, all of which were benign, but in my opinion, they were created by that thread and being sewn up over time. So it's now a place where I love to sit with my grandmothers and also all my other ancestors, whether they be starseed ancestors, energetic ancestors, or DNA ancestors. I love to sit with them because the wisdom that I get, it pulls on other threads that are on different sacks of trauma or sacks of wisdom, because I do get those as well. I get big old sacks of wisdom that when I pull on the thread, it opens up and beautiful things bloom out of it. But that's my experience in doing some ancestral work. And I think it's particularly important as we're recording this, we're approaching the Day of the Dead, when you do have altars, where you sit with family members who are no longer with you, where you do the grave visits, where you have food and drink. And by the way, through a very sweet mentor of mine in some of these practices, I did learn to put out food for my ancestors. They are hungry, as she says. So I do. I've of course gotten into my sourdough girly days. So I did offer some of my fresh baked bread to some of the grandmothers during the process, and also just sitting with my own intuition and feeling into that particular stitch that got created in their lifetime, whether that was their intention, their contract, or somebody else impinging that upon it. And it was a joyful experience. And I know this is a weird thing to say. It was a joyful experience to unwind that thread, and the loss of that organ out of my body has become a blessing, because I do feel like it loosened that up, not just for me, but for all of that ancestry line, all of the women in my ancestry, whether they be ones that I met or ones that I've only learned of in a million different ways.
Right. Such a powerful experience.
It was a very powerful experience. And I recorded it all. I wrote it all in a journal.
Nice.
Good. And someday I'm going to share it in a little bit more detail specifically, because I do think that those stories are so important to tell. So
they really are. And I think when I look at my own family, one of the things that I recognize the most is the loss of story.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah. It's also interesting. So I too am an adopted child, adult. And I don't always have the same, like, you speak very highly of your ancestors. And, well, some of it I recognize as my mom, my adoptive mom's belief and thoughts, right? That she told me repeatedly as I was growing up. So I kind of ingested those. And they are not necessarily my beliefs, but I've taken them on. So now I'm having to do the personal work of unraveling that belief system and that thought pattern that just runs in my head, right? But when I was doing work with my ancestors, I think the first, let me back up. I had problems in elementary school. We did the draw your family tree.
Yeah.
I hope they don't do that still.
That's traumatic for kids that have been adopted and know that they were adopted.
Just the way families are made. What does that look like on a tree? Like, how can you visually do that? And it does put a lot of, there's big emotions around that for, I think, a lot of kids, you know, and it really, that activity, I think, is a cultural expectation, right?
Yeah.
And so it very much, you are taught just by that exercise that, oh, well, your tree's wrong or
normal. You're normal or it's weird.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't have a lot of information about my adoptive family. And truthfully, I don't have a lot of information about my birth family. I did meet my birth mom, and she actually really liked genealogy and ancestral work. And so when she would talk about it, just in our conversations, I would write stuff down. And then Ancestry.com did the blood test and all of that, and outed my adoptive
or my biological.
Yeah, I know.
Outing all of these illegitimate children left and right.
That's right. Yeah, so that was fun. That fine print, when they say you may learn new information, for me, I didn't. My birth mom was very open about, she named my birth father and told me what she knew about him and all of that. But I did blow up my half brother's life by appearing in his ancestry chart. So, sorry about that, buddy. But, anyway, so back to my birth mom, like she gave me some information and through my notes, I wrote it down, but then with the combination of her story and ancestry science, if you will, right? I was able to build out one of the lines, her father's line, branch, whatever you want to call it, all the way back to the 1600s, which is like super cool. And I realized for a kid that didn't have any knowledge growing up of like where she came from, that mattered to me, and it mattered more than I kind of thought it did, because it gave me a sense of identity, right, that I didn't have with my adoptive family. So anyway, and then I found through building out my birth mother's line, there's just this little tiny branch, and I really haven't gone anywhere with it. And it's got a couple of generations back. And so it's been a lot of fun. But anyway, my story with all this is that I was working on Ancestry had some, a couple of years ago, I paid for the additional information, right? So I got a lot more dates and history on each person, which was fun. And so I had written it all down, discontinued that plan. And now every once in a while, to get me back into the loop, they'll say, hey, guess what? We found more information on your fourth grandfather. You want to see it, you know, trying to entice me back into paying some more money. Anyway, I'll take all that free stuff and I add it to my notes. And I was, I was sitting there with that note open, my family tree line just written out on a notebook. And I'd been working, and I'm writing a book right now, and it's not going real well at the moment. And I'm trying to, I guess one of the things that I'm struggling with is it relevant? Are people going to understand what I'm saying? And so I have this thought in my head. I have the family tree open. And I was like, gosh, you know, wouldn't it be cool if somebody in my, an ancestor could step up and say, yeah, I understand what you're talking about. And so I'm sitting with all of that. And then all of a sudden I hear this little voice say, I have a dog.
I love it.
And I'm like, oh, okay. I have a dog, but it wasn't my voice.
Yeah.
And I've done enough personal work. I know like parts of self, you know, those voices and the nuances of the tones that they use and stuff like that. So it wasn't that, right?
Yeah.
So I'm clearly getting a message from somebody else that they have a dog. And so then I pull my journal out with everything else, you know, my computer's up and on work, and my notebook, my spiral notebook with the family trees right sitting on one side, and I've got my journal now in front of me. And I was like, and what, who am I speaking with, right? And she gives her name, and I write it down, and I'm like, well, tell me about your dog, because it's relevant to my work. And so she goes on to tell me all about her dog, and I am just writing everything that I hear her say in my head. And then she starts, I want to say she starts, I don't know. She shares her memories with me, if that makes sense.
It does to me.
So in my head, I'm seeing this woman interact with her dog, and her dog's name is Dot. And she's like a Brittany Spaniel mutt kind of cross. So she's about that size and body shape and longer hair. And she's white, and she has a couple of spots, which told me that's how she got the name Dot.
Yeah.
but it was so funny. And she's like, I love her. And I could see that love. Right. And I could see it reciprocated in the memories that she was sharing with me.
Yeah.
And it was exactly what I was struggling with. Like, she's showing me through her memories the answer to my question, is this relevant? Will people understand what I'm talking about? Right. Yeah. And for me, I'm like kind of getting emotional here because it was so beautiful. You know, you think about the crossing of time and how we think of relationships in different ways in 2025 versus 1925 or 1825. Yeah. And that's just not true. You know, there are some things that are, that I think transcend time and connection to the natural world and the animals that live in it are one of those things. And it was such, like, having somebody that I'm related to reach out to me and say, I understand what you're doing and it matters, is such a beautiful, supportive, loving gesture. And like, I so appreciate her stepping forward. Lily is her name. She's my second, like I said, my second grandmother, my great grandmother. And so we finish up the conversation, and she kind of disconnects and disappears, if you will. And I'm like going, okay, I didn't want to be rude and look up on my family tree from ancestry. Like, is she really my second grandmother?
yeah.
But I did look it up, and she indeed is. And she's on my mom, my birth mom's side. She's my birth mom's mom, so my birth grandmother's mother.
Yeah.
And she's this little itty bitty branch, like literally that branch development only goes to her. Like I haven't developed it out any further than or any further back than her. But anyway, it was so beautiful. And I think not only did she answer questions like that I was struggling with in the moment of, is my work relevant and will people understand it? But also just her showing up in that moment was the really solidified for me, I guess. I'm struggling with words here a little. That our ancestors are with us.
Yeah.
Right? Even if we don't acknowledge them, or even if we've been brought up to be told that they don't matter, they're still here. And they're still wanting to offer support and wisdom and share their stories with us if we listen. And it has taken me a while to develop the ability to listen, to sit and to connect energetically with other beings. But it's such a beautiful thing. And I think that, you know, if maybe more of us tapped into the wisdom that previous generations had to share with us, you know, we'd learn a lot.
Absolutely.
So anyway, there's my story, my ancestor story. Yeah, it's just very beautiful. I'm glad that I recorded the whole thing. And I wrote, you know, afterwards, I sat and journaled for a long time of just what that conversation meant to me personally. When I set up my altar this year, I will have her picture, and she'll be part of it. So it's cool.
That's so awesome. It's interesting to meet these people that at a level that you can't, like, I didn't share air with a lot of the women that showed up for me in the ancestral work I did earlier this year. But interestingly, I also learned things about the women I did share air with, like my own biological mother and her mother and her mother. So I was lucky enough to meet my great grandmother on that particular side of my family in real life. Interestingly enough, Ancestry sent me a very interesting message yesterday regarding her. Her name is Clara Cordelia Cable, but they were like, oh, here's her death certificate. And her death is coming up. It was on Thanksgiving, actually. And I was 2 years old. So, but it's interesting. Sometimes Ancestry will shoot me things like that. And it's a moment where Clara's saying, hey, maybe you want to sit with me for a minute. You know, I have some things I might want to share. And it comes up as technology, and it backs me up for a second to sit and go, okay, maybe I do want to take a moment to sit with that individual. And I don't know, the ancestral work has been super enlightening. And I know in my own ancestral roots, not here in the United States, but my European ancestral roots, and when you go back into the more ancient times, people were very connected to their ancestors then. And that is still very much a part of all of that energy that created me in this body, in this manifestation, in this lifetime. And I think we somehow got away from that in some races, in some cultures that
I was going to say, we're speaking as two white women.
It's not true of everybody. Yeah. there are other people very near to us who are very up close and personal with their ancestors on a daily basis because their culture encourages them to do so. But the culture that you and I grew up in wasn't that way. And I will tell anybody who's listening who goes, wow, this has been kind of interesting. I would like to meet my ancestors. It doesn't take a lot. Just say, I'd like to meet my ancestors and they'll right? start showing up. In reality, you know, you may want to put a few things in place, like only ancestors who have my best wishes at heart or things like that. It's an interesting process to start opening that door. And the realizations that come through it, whether it's from the actual genealogy part of things or whether it's through the more energetic work, it's profound and life-changing. And the interesting thing to my story is wrapping up that and pulling that thread all of the way off the bag and emptying it out. It felt very much like I was now in the part of my life that it now belongs all to me. And sometimes I didn't feel that way before that work was, I felt like I owed somebody something. And that released that energy. So I feel like I own what time I have left here. And I did what I came to do for that part of my agreement. And it did shift everything for everybody. And it all worked out exactly as it was supposed to. And now I can move on to the next thing that I can do here. And it's much lighter. It's a much lighter feeling. It truly is. So it was very, very invigorating for that. So, and I know that your experience really changed you as well. It gave you connection to a place where you don't, as an adopted kid, even though I knew half my biological family, when you're adopted, you don't necessarily know where you belong, right? You feel even if your adopted parents are really good at making you feel welcome and like you're chosen and all of those things, you still have this weird notion that, or weird underlying current of disconnection. And it may be something that you're called to find out, and it may be something that you're not called to find out. But if you are called to find it out, it's an interesting exploration to undergo.
Very much, I agree. I had a wonderful adopted family. When you were talking, you were including, at the very beginning of our conversation, you included the energetic support that the entire adopted family tree, right?
Yeah.
Supports you. And I know for me, like, I struggle because are they really, quote, family and versus the biological? And to know that all of them were all connected, just is a great reminder for that. So I thank you for that. It's a weird feeling to be adopted, but to have connection, have that type of conversation with somebody from my biological part of my history, was profound. It really was. And I very much appreciate that.
So. Well, thankfully, Lily came forward and all of mine. Now, I will leave it on this note. In the adoption of the immigrant German grandmother, whose name is Mamie, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's Mary. Like, all of the kids, all the girls in that family were named Mary in some incarnation of the word Mary. But Mammy probably is more correct of how it was pronounced. Again, never met these people, so I don't know. So I'm going to say Mammy. So Mammy, one of the things in adopting kind of her energy into my life, she is a clean freak. Like, this woman likes things picked up and neat. And what's weird about that is once I met her, I am not a clean freak. Like, I never have been. I am 59 freaking years old, and my house has been consistently a mess for those 59 years. Like, I was raised by people who did not care about cleanliness. Like, as long as you could walk from point A to point B and you weren't getting sick, we were good. But this woman likes things clean. Like, and she gets in my head about picking stuff up off the floor and making my bed and keeps reminding me, if I would have raised you, things would have been way different. And I'm like, but you didn't have that option, sister. Right. You know, that wasn't your option. You were gone long before I was born. But it's interesting. My house is much more organized than it ever has been before. And I attribute it to her. Her energy kind of gets after me to don't leave that there. Pick it up. Put it in the wash basket. Like, you know, I'm hearing her. And I buck the system all the time. I talk back to her. So, and then my son thinks I've lost my mind because I'm talking to ghosts in our house. But it's still interesting. And I do have to say, I get more done and am happier with a cleaner house. So thank her for that. But anyway. All right. Do you have any closing thoughts before we shut this episode down?
I don't. Nice. I love these conversations, though. They're so much fun. Thank you for letting me share. Yeah,
it's interesting. And I hope other people are finding it interesting out there listening to it. So Vicki and I do have a community that we formed called the Ember Wing Collective. You can find it at emberwingcollective.com. If you're interested in participating or exploring more things about your own ancestors or just exploring the alternative and traditional paths to spirituality and whole person health, we would love to have you in the community to share your experiences. So you can find us again at emberwingcollective.com. Thanks for hanging out.